This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of February 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 15th of February, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: unacceptable county cuts, more than 1,000 march over second Brexit vote, and get behind this, Tories issue leisure centre rallying cry. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was unacceptable county cuts. County-wide plans to reduce support for children with special educational needs and disabilities have been called completely unacceptable by a national charity. Hampshire County Council has proposed changes to its specialist teaching advisory service, which provides support for children who have hearing or visual impairments, physical disabilities, or speech, language and communication needs. Currently, in the consultation phase until March the 9th, the plans involve a reduction in visits for children with mild or moderate hearing loss from specialists, affecting around 900 children and resulting in the loss of several full-time staff. This has now sparked the National Deaf Children's Society to call on the council to rethink its plans. However, the authority says that no decisions have yet been made. If approved, the council hopes the cuts will save £708,000 a year. Eva Jolly from the charity said, "Deaf children already face enough barriers in the classroom, the playground, and their everyday lives. These proposals now risk causing more stress and uncertainty for more than 1,000 deaf children and their parents. These children rely on the support they receive, but it now risks being torn up in a matter of months. Their support could be cut, their technology could go unfixed, and their grades could begin to suffer even more. Hampshire County Council must act now to quash these proposals and show families across the region that it will deliver for deaf children and their families. Every child deserves the same chance in life, and deaf children are no exception." The charity added that while visits for children with high levels of deafness would remain the same, the council has, through its own report, accepted that its proposals could lead to a rise in teacher caseloads and delays in addressing issues with equipment, such as hearing aids and radio aids. A county council spokesperson said, "While we understand the concerns of the National Deaf Children's Society, it is important to emphasise that no decisions have yet been made. Furthermore, we can assure parents and children that if it is agreed that the proposals should be taken forward, appropriate support would continue to be provided for children who are deaf or whose hearing is impaired in any way. The consultation we are undertaking is part of a review of the Specialist Teacher Advisory Service. Our aim is to consider ways in which the service could operate more effectively to deliver the support needed for all children and young people with special needs and disabilities. The challenge is to do so within the limited resources available, which is why the feedback from the consultation is so important to us."
More than 1,000 march over a second Brexit vote. Some say thousands, others say hundreds, but the fact is the turnout for the anti-Brexit march was huge. Demonstrators took to the streets of Winchester on Saturday to call for a second Brexit referendum. People from across the political divide marched down the high street before hearing speakers at the Guildhall, including Lib Dem leader Sir Vince Cable, who spoke against the souring of the public mood. Addressing the crowd, which organisers put around 2,500 strong, Sir Vincent said, "It's not something that happens in the future. We have got Europeans leaving this country because they feel they're not wanted. We have got a souring of the public mood, which is deeply worrying for the future of the country. Our membership of Europe is something to be proud of. It's the greatest peace project of modern times. To speak on our behalf is what Europe is there for." Speaking to the Chronicle, Sir Vince added that he was blown away by the turnout and that the government may find they have no choice but to run a second vote, and that the chances of it happening were much greater than it currently being touted. Other speakers include Baroness Cramer and Labour peer Lord Adonis. Annalisa Keeley was there with her 5-year-old son Daniel Salamanca and a homemade sign saying, "Bored of Brexit." She said, "It's been going on since he was born. We want a second vote desperately. I'm not the protesting type. This is my first protest. Daniel is European. He's 3/4 Spanish. And I'm heartbroken. It's not just us. It's what we are doing to the rest of Europe. We are part of Europe. We are not part of any other continent." Around 20 vote leave campaigners has made their voices heard through Sir Vince's speech. Amongst them was the leader of Make Britain Great Again group, Luke Nash-Jones, who said he does not want a second vote because he believes democracy is very important. It's really disrespectful to democracy. It's almost snobby to speak down to the working class people. Carol Smith, 55, added, "We don't need another vote. What is the second referendum going to be on? They can't even decide between themselves." Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who represents Alresford and the Itchen Valley, said a second vote would be the last man standing, but would give politicians the chance to blame the people and would represent a definitive decision. He added, "We've already negotiated for 2 years. Another 5 years of negotiations would be horrifying." Pro-leavers in the Hampshire Out campaign estimated the march at about 1,400 strong. "The police could not provide an estimate," said the spokesman. And there are a number of photographs, and I'll just read you out what some of the banners said. One of them says, "Unity." Another says, "I'm 17, Brexit stole my future. Brexit is bonkers and I'm here for my future," were just a few of the slogans that were being displayed.
Get behind this. The Tories issue the Leisure Centre rallying cry. And this is accompanied by a series of photographs. There's a photograph of a couple of the councillors, Councillor Caroline Horrell, who's the health and well-being portfolio holder, and Councillor Lisa Griffiths, who's also on the council, and she's with the Everyone Active representatives at the Garrison ground site in Bar End. And there's a series of three artist impressions showing the new leisure centre. "It's about time everyone got behind the project." Those are the words of one of the Winchester's most senior councillors as the planned £38 million leisure centre's business case was debated once again. Speaking at the Leisure Centre Committee on Monday afternoon, portfolio holder for business partnership, Councillor Rob Humsby, called on councillors to back the facility planned for Bar End as it nears the final sign-off it needs before construction. In a thinly veiled dig at the Lib Dems, Councillor Humby said, "I get frustrated when some members just continually want to put this project down. Unfortunately, we can't have everything for everybody. It would be nice, actually, if everyone got behind this project. It's about time everyone got behind the project. It will be fantastic for Winchester." However, Councillor Humby's rallying cry was quickly replaced by familiar concerns over the plan to only include an 8-court hall rather than the 12-court facility originally proposed. As previously reported, Conservative-led Winchester City Council has long been criticised by opposition Liberal Democrat councillors over the size of the sports hall, which, despite being larger, would still have the same number of courts as River Park, the leisure centre it's replacing. Councillor Brian Lamming, who described himself as an enthusiastic supporter of the new leisure centre, said at last week's meeting, "The actual increase in size doesn't cost you any more. All you get is extra income. I think you really need to start thinking about that." However, that was disputed by council officers, who said it would mean more being spent in terms of utilities, management and staffing. Councillor Guy Ashton, the finance portfolio holder, added, "A bigger sports hall would mean the elimination of a football pitch from the garrison ground, reducing the park's overall revenue." The meeting also heard from Winchester Netball Club's Sandra Bohe, and she repeated many of the concerns she aired at last week's overview and scrutiny committee, including the difficulty the club faces in finding adequate space, while Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, SALT, the chief executive, Emma Black, said the council would see a greater benefit if it engaged more community sports clubs. Again, the council disputed that it had not consulted with Winchester Netball Club, the key council officer, Andy Hickman, head of program, saying the council had records of meetings taking place. The business case still needs to be put before the full council for a final decision. Building work is then expected to get underway within the next few months, with work expected to be completed in 2021. As previously reported, the council has appointed Wilmot Dixon to build the leisure centre, while Everyone Active has been revealed as the preferred operator.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle editorial comment, First Person and Bill Garum. And then we have the announcements and what's on. So firstly, the death announcements this week. Barnes. Margaret Barnes, who died suddenly on the 29th of January. Broomham, Dorothy Broomham, formerly of Sutton Scotney, who died peacefully on the 2nd of February, aged 96. George, Peter Michael Crystal George, who died on the 3rd of February, aged 84. Jeffreys, Josephine Jeffreys, died peacefully on the 6th of February, aged 86. Jonas, Betty Elizabeth Jonas, née Eames, who died on the 10th of February. Salter, Susan Carol Salter, who died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 74. And Sorrel, Barry James Sorrel, who died on the 1st of February after a short illness, aged 85. And now we have a Christian comment read by Andrew, please.
The Church and Mental Health. Most people nowadays, including Christians, know that mental illness is very prevalent. One in four people are likely to suffer from a mental health problem in any year. The churches are much more aware than they used to be. When I was ordained 20 years ago as a sector minister in the Methodist Church, working with the mentally ill and handicapped people, people with a learning disability, I struggled to introduce the subject. Now I can't stop people wanting to know more. However, it's not just adults that are affected. Did you know that in every classroom there's at least one child with a diagnosable mental health condition, and many more struggle with issues from bullying to bereavement? This last week, from the 4th to the 10th of February, has been the 5th Children's Annual Mental Health Week. This was started by Place to Be and is aimed at educating and training teachers and youth workers about children's mental health, as well as the children themselves. The theme this year is Healthy Inside and Out. Lots of resources are available. When we think about healthy living, we tend to focus on looking after our bodies through food, being active, and getting enough sleep. However, in order to be healthy overall, it is important that we look after our minds, our mental well-being. Our bodies and minds are actually very closely linked, so things we do to improve our physical well-being can help us mentally as well. We can feel better about ourselves, focus on what we want to do, and deal with difficult times. Religion may or may not help us physically, but there can be a definite role in self-esteem and dealing with hard times. Knowing that God loves us all, regardless of who we are and whatever we have done, can help us feel accepted and supported. The church, though, has to be true to these precepts and treat people accordingly. Young people's difficulties and teenage suicides have been very much in the news recently. Hearing about these sad stories and knowing it was Children's Mental Health Week, I was curious to know what the Methodist Church had to say on the subject. I have to confess to not having looked at the website recently, being busy with retiring and the present and the subsequent sequelae. I must say I was very pleasantly surprised. There are a lot of very useful downloadable leaflets done in conjunction with Young Minds. They are aimed at different age groups, under 12, 12 to 18, and the 18 plus, typically 18 to 30. There is also one dealing with exam stress. I do not know about other denominations, but look forward to hearing or finding out about them. Jesus did not treat people with any sort of illness, including mental problems, differently. He accepted and helped them all. We who claim to follow him must seek to do likewise.
Thank you, Andrew. Now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And the first one from Councillor Lisa Griffiths, headed Unbalanced. Sir, I was very disappointed to read the Chronicle's Unbalanced front page story about the Sport and Leisure Park, Chronicle February the 7th. Sadly, it was alive with Lib Dem and others' misrepresentations of the facts about this excellent project that will not cost the taxpayer a penny. It's unfortunate the Chronicle reporter did not make it clearer. We Conservatives repeatedly said the assertions of the Lib Dems and others were completely wrong. Firstly, it's unacceptable for the netball club to come to a public meeting and tell everyone we have not consulted with them when we have evidence of over 70 conversations with them. There is a spreadsheet of feedback and responses from all sports clubs, all of which were seen by those clubs, Sport England and their national governing bodies, to ensure the accuracy of the response. Secondly, there are some facts for the Lib Dems, who will spout any nonsense in exchange for a headline. I doubt very much that if they were in power, they'd publish sensitive commercial information about a project that could potentially end up costing the taxpayer more. That would be irresponsible, would it not, Councillor Dominic Hiscock? Our consultants are leading in their industry, using the only nationally recognised scientific methods to assess need and demand. Councillors Martin Todd and Brian Laming are insulting to both officers and industry experts, believing they know better about the size of the sports hall. The last time I looked, neither were experts in designing and building sports centres. Thirdly, Conservative Councillor Eileen Berry said to officers in the meeting, I know you've already said this three times this evening, but could you again tell us if you are using the best practice industry standards to assess the needs of our new centre? The response was yes. At the very least, I believe a balanced article should have included the above. And that from Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, ward councillor for Alresford and Itchen Valley, Appledown Close, Alresford. And as a little note at the end from the letters editor, the Chronicle story was fair, accurate and balanced. It quoted two Conservative councillors, Eileen Berry and Patrick Cunningham, and senior counsel officer Andy Hickman.
Les Haswell writes, Rotary thanks. Sir, when I started my year as president of Winchester Rotary, I nominated the Winchester Hospice Project as my charity of the year. I chose this project as I found it incredible that a city such as Winchester did not have such a facility, and I was just blown away by the passion and enthusiasm of the NHS staff who were leading the drive to get the project off the ground. The club have been supported throughout by a number of local businesses who have donated venues, prizes, auction items and cash. Individuals have also supported our efforts by giving freely of time, effort and money. During the first half of my year, a number of Rotary members have organised events and fundraisers with the help of these businesses and people. A local art gallery helped us raise more than £2,400. A group of Rotary members and spouses climbed Snowdon in atrocious weather conditions and raised about £10,000. The Rotary Masquerade Ball, run in the Guildhall on December the 14th, attracted over 200 revellers who enjoyed a night of good food, good wine and danced the night away to the music provided by the brilliant Juice Box. The event, which was ably organised by a committee of Rotarians, whom I will be eternally grateful, as I will be to the individuals and local businesses whose generosity allowed us to raise in the region of £24,500. A number of smaller events have added to the sum raised, and we will continue raising money for the hospice until the end of my year at the end of June this year. All of this fundraising activity has been publicised and reported by the Hampshire Chronicle on an ongoing basis, and I would like to thank the editor and staff at the Chronicle for their continued support. And as I said, that was from Les Haswell, President, Winchester Rotary, Churchill Close, Kingsworthy.
And this letter is from Peter Hargreaves and is titled Treachery. Sir, although the Lib Dems and the Labour Party promised a referendum in their 2005 general election manifestos, the Lib Dems later decided to support the Labour Party and dropped the party's campaign for a British vote on a referendum on signing up to a European Constitution Treaty renamed as an Amending Lisbon Treaty, denying a people's vote, which was a referendum, that the majority of Britons had been demanding and that the Lib Dems had promised. Wednesday, March the 5th, 2008, the day of treachery in the House of Commons, that day will go down in political history when the Lib Dems reneged on their promise for a referendum and filed through the voting lobbies with Labour to condemn Britain to a European Constitution Treaty, ensuring that Britain as a sovereign nation would gradually disappear and would instead become a small entity in a giant new state named the European Union, without giving the people a vote. Incredibly, Lib Dems are now campaigning for a people's vote to overturn the 2016 Democratic majority vote in the referendum to leave the European Union. Firstly, they promised the nation a referendum in 2005, and then duplicitly voted against it and now want to cancel a democratic majority referendum to hold a second referendum many believe would keep the nation enslaved in the European Union. It seems the Lib Dems are determined not to trust the British people or consider them incapable of making a responsible decision that should be made only by the elite and young voters with supposedly superior education, but no experience of life at the coalface. It's doubtful if there has ever been a more infamous act of political treachery perpetrated against the nation by a British political party, and probably underlines the respect and size of the Lib Dem representation in Parliament. And that letter is from Peter Hargreaves of Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And this from Ian Tate, headed End the Parking. Sir, I happen to come into the centre of Winchester virtually every day, and I always walk into the square. When Hampshire and Winchester councils refurbished the square some years ago, there was a lot of debate about whether vehicle access should be severely restricted. I was of the view that the fewer cars entering the square, the better, but the argument was lost. I also strongly challenged the cathedral authorities back in 2012 when they shifted cars from behind the education centre in the inner close to the outer close. At the time, I was assured that it was only temporary. Oh, only a temporary arrangement until the building of the new centre was complete. On Sunday, I witnessed a line of traffic driving into the outer close from the square, and one even drove along the path to see if there was a space in front of the war memorial, where there was already a vehicle, bright red, parked. As custodians of one of the most important buildings in the country, I feel that the cathedral authorities have ruined both the inner and outer close by turning their incredible, wonderful space into big car parks. The debate about a statue of Jane Austen seems all pretty stupid to me when the cathedral is being choked to death by a proliferation of shiny metal boxes. The cathedral is one of the most sustainable locations in the area, yet the cathedral authorities say that all their volunteers have to be able to park for free and in walking distance of the building. Why are they so different to all the other people who volunteer for other worthy institutions in Winchester who don't have access to large, informal, free car park? And that from Ian Tate, Berwick Road, Week, Winchester.
Splendid project. So when the initial proposals for the station approach plans were presented, I personally could see the development as a splendid project for regeneration, not only of this key location, but for Winchester itself. With any major development, there will always be concerns, but the overriding evidence is that it will attract more people to commute to Winchester or have access to the proposed office space, chronicled February the 7th. The fact that an estimated £81 million to the local economy, as well as creating around 1,000 city centre jobs in addition to 400 indirect jobs, cannot be ignored. While acknowledging John Hearn's concern regarding the potential dead street footage, this is a negative posture considering there are already shops in the station area and the addition of such facilities would ensure the frontage was very much alive. Station approach will provide a potentially buoyant and positive location for Winchester residents and commuters. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Coast, Badgers Farm.
And this letter is from Nick Ray and is titled Ignoring Cycling. Sir, where should cyclists park if all 15 of the St. Maurice's covert cycling racks by Debenhams at the very centre of Winchester are to be ripped out? Sue Coles, Winchester CTC, in an article in the Chronicle January 24, made good points and highlighted potentially misleading inaccuracies in Caroline Brooks' defence of removing this vital area, and the lack of clarity on any replacement of the only undercover and CCTV-protected cycling provision in the centre of town. A plan that raises the question, does Winchester City Council really understand modern city cycle usage? One reason that people cycle is because it's quick. But if cycling to town means a long wheel on foot, from, say, the top of the High Street to Colebrook Street, on the vague hope of finding a safe and legal place to lock a bicycle, why bother? Meet for a coffee in town? No, can't park my bicycle, or it might get nicked. Or, pop into town to buy something from a local shop by bike? Nah, I might as well click on Amazon, etc. Is that what the council and BID is here to encourage? Is it what local businesses want? And any Amazon or similar click not only removes potential revenue and jobs from town, but also generates a diesel van delivery with associated congestion and pollution. And this is the problem. Where is the sense, knowledge, research or strategy behind the council's narrow thinking and provision for cycling? Councillor Brooks' tone, too, the very minutiae of her argument, is dispiriting. Remember, it was the, quote, view of what? The Mercure's loading bay that was originally cited as the justification for the removal of these racks. Let's see what the movement strategy offers. But Winchester City Council seems unable to include or perceive cycling as part of an integrated local transport strategy. Oxford, Cambridge, and other cities with difficult and historic town plans, and many European cities manage to do far, far better. Why does Winchester City Council, and do some councillors, find it so very, very hard to get on their bikes too? And that letter is from Nick Ray, Fordingdon Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this from William Gubbins, headed Madonna, show no need for props. Shows no need for props, sorry. Sir, the public launch of a proposed statue of Jane Austen in the grounds of the cathedral has attracted considerable comment, ranging from questioning the need for a statue at all through its high cost to its perceived projection onto Jane of modern cultural values, which would have been alien to her and do not reflect what we know of her character. Leaving these issues aside, I wish to comment on one particular aspect of the proposal. Canon Rowley Ream cautions in his letter, Chronicle January 17, against interfering in the sculptor's creative and interpretative processes. However, if there is to be a statue of Jane, I think it is legitimate from an aesthetic point of view to question why it should be necessary to place right behind her a large and ponderous bronze slab inscribed with a tree. I realise this refers to Jane's love of walking in the countryside, but all around the proposed site there are fine natural trees. Leave them to make the point. Consider Martin Jennings' figure of John Betjeman in St Pancras Station and, in the case of a statue in a cathedral setting, the Walking Madonna by Elizabeth Frink in the Close in Salisbury Cathedral. They do not employ artificial props, but instead rely to striking effect on an interrupted view of the great Victorian terminus and Salisbury Cathedral and its grounds. And that from William Gubbins, St Thomas Street, Winchester.
Rough Sleepling. Sir, we should be appalled at the recorded increase in detected rough sleepers in Hampshire. Although councils report that they are doing their best to address the problem, they are severely hampered by the draconian austerity policies of the Tory government. The impact of welfare cuts, the unadulterated fiasco of universal credit, soaring rents and the shortage of truly affordable homes are all major factors responsible for this increase. In October 2018, 4,677 UK rough sleepers were recorded, representing a 165% increase since 2010, when the Tories came to power. In 2017, 600 homeless and rough sleepers died on UK streets, with the average age of 44 for men and 42 for women. Recorded numbers of families exist in overcrowded homes, accelerated by the bedroom tax and the government failure to address family overcrowding, universal credit or the outcome of its catastrophic implementation is responsible for the upsurge and trapping of people on the streets, preventing them from having a decent, warm, safe home. It is clear that the government must do much more to address the problem, making good at least 8 years' damaging austerity. Since 2010, the true scale of the problem has not been completely revealed. Rough sleeping figures are flawed and inaccurate, obscuring true levels. What should be done is an urgent reform of the benefit cap, universal credit, the fees on housing benefit for private renters, and the provision of substantial numbers of genuinely affordable and accessible housing. This is not just a cold weather problem, although the rough sleeper death rate rises dramatically in winter. It is a perennial humanitarian issue for all severely cash-strapped Hampshire and UK councils. They do their best, but it's time for the government to stop their punishment of the poor and legislate with practical help and show much more compassion. And there is a picture of the doorway of the Discovery Centre with what can only be described as a heap of blankets and a heap of duvet. You can't even see the poor people underneath them. And that was from Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And this letter is from Dr. Michael Bennett. It's titled Non-Expert, and it takes us to a theme which is very much a theme at the moment, which is the new leisure centre. Sir, I play sport on a regular basis in the sports hall at River Park and can confirm that the 8 badminton courts are insufficient to meet the needs of the fitness and sports club for the over 50s. The club uses the sports hall for badminton, short tennis, table tennis, and keep fit classes during the day on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We use one court for 4 table tennis tables on a Thursday and worry that playing so close together will cause accidents. In addition, only 16 people can play at one time, often leaving 10 or more people waiting. Other sports have similar problems. I understand from the Hampshire Chronicle in February the 7th that, quote, experts, unquote, are advising on the new sports centre, and they think that the 8 courts are sufficient for Winchester. Visit River Park on a Thursday morning and you will learn that this is nonsense. When the new sports centre at Bar End was proposed, I was opposed because it seemed crazy to move the main sports centre from the city centre to the outskirts when we should be encouraging sport and reducing traffic pollution. As I now learn that the City Council is spending £38 million of our money and there is no improvement to the sports hall, this makes me very angry. Some facts can be supplied by non-experts. There are numerous housing developments around the city, including 2,000 houses being built at Barton Farm, that will increase the need for sport facilities. The number of retired people demanding sport is increasing. My club makes efficient use of the sports centre. It operates during the day when younger people in education or at work would generally not attend, and it makes a considerable financial contribution. It is time the City Council started listening. And that letter is from Dr. Michael Bennett, Fortington Road, Fulflood, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we're going to step back in time, but not quite so far this time. Only 100 years, Nikki.
Dated Saturday, February the 15th, 1919. We much regret to have to record the death which took place on Sunday of Mrs. Holdaway, wife of Councillor F.W. Holdaway of Cranworth Road and a former mayor of Winchester. The deceased lady, who had not enjoyed robust health for some time, made herself very popular during the mayoralty of her husband, and many of the citizens will recall with pleasure the dignified part she played when called upon to receive the King and Queen on the occasion of their Majesties' visits in July 1912. The second item, Winchester this week expects to close down its experiences of the peaceful invasion of our kinsmen from the West, and the only American troops in Winchester area will be such of the headquarters permanent staff as necessarily must remain a little longer to clear up. The orders to evacuate camp came in the end at somewhat short notice, and while the main body of troops could be moved, the details of a rest area like Winchester have, of course, been very full and minute.
And 50 years ago, on Saturday, February the 15th, 1969... a tree preservation order on all the trees which border on Harestock Road, Winchester, has been proposed by the Southern Divisional Planning Officer, Mr. E. Benfield. As a result of the application to build 16 houses on the land at the junction of the road and the A34, the Southern Divisional Committee meeting on Monday refused permission for the development because it would mean the felling of a belt of these trees. Mr. Benfield reported that the density of the houses and the access road would mean the loss of some tall beeches, which in itself would endanger a further belt. I'm very much concerned about these trees because they are important as a group. If they're knocked down, they should be carefully replanted, he said. He added, however, that the applicants had refused to agree to admit reference to any number of dwellings to obtain outline permission. The site is allocated as residential development on the Winchester town map, and the applicants are to appeal. And the second item, a redevelopment of the corner site of the junction of High Street and Jury Street, Winchester, which includes the Westminster Bank, is proposed by the newly formed National Westminster Bank Limited. The initial plans, which project a boldly modern design for a new bank frontage with office accommodation above, stretching around the corner into Jury Street, were discussed by the City Council Planning Committee on Wednesday. The design was generally welcomed by the committee members, who thought it was an improvement on some of the other recent buildings in the city centre. In particular, a system of bays into the buildings at the higher level on the corner itself would avoid an ugly squaring off and help the sight lines for traffic negotiating the central traffic lights. Mrs. W.J. Carpenter-Turner, chairman of the committee, said the development would produce curious and pleasant contrasts with the Victorian surroundings.
And we have two articles from 25 years ago, Friday, February the 18th, 1994. A deep depression is hanging over the heads of Winchester's Job Club members following news that the centre will close in March due to lack of support. The club was set up by Employment Services a year ago, and it gives valuable advice and practical help to unemployed people, letting them, for example, make use of newspapers, trade journals and telephones. But spokeswoman for Employment Services, Sue Scott, explained this week that the club was no longer financially viable. The decision has been taken by senior management to close it, because over the last year it has been under-supported, she said. A job club must be viable, and up to now there have not been enough people to support it. She added that there were other job clubs in the area, like Eastleigh, and before Winchester was open, they were going there regularly. The second one is, or the second item, Hampshire County and Winchester City Councils have given strong backing to the campaign to keep the city's magistrates' courts open. Members from both councils resolved on Monday to oppose the proposed closures at Winchester, and the county has also given its support to the threatened court at Petersfield. At the county meeting, members agreed with Winchester councillor Harvey Cole that they should try to discover more precisely the costs imposed by people other than defendants, professionals and lay users, who, like defendants, would have to travel to other centres in the event of closures of Winchester Court. Mr. Cole also said that in the event of Winchester closing, they should ask very strongly that Eastleigh be kept open. At the moment, there was a question mark over Eastleigh, he said. The committee heard submissions from Mr. Chris Mather of Hampshire Incorporated Law Society and from Winchester magistrate Mrs. Anne Odling. Peter Robertson, county secretary, said that there had been three representations against closure at Petersfield, and last week, he added, there had been a presentation by the clerk to the magistrates' courts committee, Mike West.
Thank you. That concludes the historical items, and now we're going to move back to the present with the editorial comment, Nikki.
Which is headed, A Case of Shooting the Messenger. The Chronicle has come in for criticism from senior city councillor Lisa Griffiths over our coverage of the proposed sports centre at Bar End. In a letter on page 26 of today's issue, she accuses our news story last week of being unbalanced. The sports centre is a contentious issue, with the Liberal Democrats and sports clubs raising objections about the £38 million scheme. Councillor Griffiths writes to us, "It's unfortunate the Chronicle reporter did not make it clearer. We Conservatives repeatedly said the assertions of the Lib Dems and others were completely wrong." For the record, the Chronicle clearly put forward the Conservative views on this, quoting two councillors, Eileen Berry and Patrick Cunningham, as well as a senior council officer, Andy Hickman. This is a classic case of shooting the messenger. A newspaper's role is not to act as a cheerleader for city council schemes, but to report on the public scrutiny of proposals to spend large amounts of public money. That means giving space to comments from critics of schemes. In the case of the sports centre, the Liberal Democrats and others have raised concerns about funding and the detailed nature of what is proposed. It would be a strange, worrying world if newspapers were unable to report those concerns.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person.
Doing the Right Thing by George Hayter. It was supposed to be a cheerful Last Supper. Instead, I plunged my wife into depression. Oh, excuse me. I don't even know if I want to go anymore, I found myself telling her. It was the night before we were due to leave for a new life in Holland. My wife had generously gone along with my idea of moving to the land of Rembrandt and had worked hard to secure a flat for us. Her mouth dropped open as I went on. It's been so much hassle and we haven't even got there yet. Electricity, gas, internet, water... None of it will be on because they won't let us have a bank account and the authorities will kick us out after 3 months because we can't get a residency. We need a Dutch account to pay for the services like electricity, but the Dutch banks told us registration was required to open an account. The earliest appointment we have managed to get with the registration officials is a month away. You can jump the queue if you have a job, but I'm retired and my wife is taking 6 months off work. My Last Supper moan went on, and we were leaving a perfectly nice house in a lovely Hampshire to move into a tiny flat in a crowded, cold, damp and expensive Amsterdam. At 7 the next morning, we set off in the car, which was stuffed to the roof with two bicycles and other essentials. We rolled into the picturesque Amsterdam 9 hours later. Even on a dim winter afternoon, the Dutch capital seemed to glow with sparkling trams, tasty architecture, electric cars and glamorous cyclists. We found our street. We didn't know exactly what our 1,700 a month canal facing flat would be like. We had chosen it from a video emailed to us by a relocation company to which we now have to pay the value of a month's rent. The payment is mostly for them filming available rental properties and their interiors, including 360-degree shots of every room and cupboard. Stepping into the two-bedroom flat, it was as good as it looked on the video, and bigger. Amsterdam overflows with artistic innovation and sleepy 17th century canal houses. Winchester's many lovely places for a cup of tea or a glass of wine are dwarfed by the endless intriguing cafes and fashionable bars here. Amsterdam is nice. But after living here for 5 days, we still don't know if we can comply with the legal requirements to register as residents. We have other doubts about settling here. How will we fill our days? We have no friends here. We are trying to learn Dutch, but the grammar seems impenetrable. Can we put up with being away from our daughter and son, both working in England? Can we survive without Winchester High Street, the cathedral closed and walks along the Itchen? On our last day in Britain, the car radio was as usual relaying the latest disagreements over Brexit. Britain's indecision reminded me of my own nervousness in the moving to the other direction, into the EU. For years, I felt that Britain's history meant it should stay outside Europe as an independent island. But hearing the Dutch view makes me concerned about the economic effects of Brexit. An Amsterdam Anglophile told my wife, Britain is a great country, but you British seem to be slowly destroying it. The landlord of our flat lamented that motor manufacturers were already making plans to leave Britain, and he reckoned that Brexiteers must be changing their minds. I had to tell him that I had seen little evidence of that, and he looked bewildered. If Brexit makes us poorer then we apply to rejoin the EU, I think the Netherlands would welcome us back. Trouble is, the vote would have to be unanimous, and some of the other 26 EU countries might not want us. I'm still wondering, are we doing the right thing?
And now we have Belgarum.
And this week, Belgarum has got a thing in either his or her bonnet about the accuracy of numbers. The first comment is about looking at the detail and is accompanied by an artist impression of the leisure centre's swimming pool, which seems to be a recurrent theme this week. As readers will know and expect, the Chronicle strives for accuracy in every article. So, when we were reminded by the City Council that the new leisure centre's pool was in fact Olympic length, that is 50 metres, not Olympic size, the Chronicle ensured reporting reflected that. Belgarum was a little surprised, therefore, to see the same City Council using the incorrect reference of an Olympic-sized pool in a press release issued last week. For context, the small but seemingly important issue comes down to the new pool's width being smaller. And on the subject of numbers, the second comment is around numbers on the march. How many people attended the anti-Brexit march on Saturday? The organisers claimed 2,500, and even the Brexiteers agreed it was over 1,000. Photos showed the Broadway did not appear to be that crowded. Full of people, certainly, but not football crowd packed, which it would have been if it had 2,000 people were squeezed in. It's unlikely Sir Vince Cable would have spoken with many of the marchers still up the High Street. Councillor Jackie Porter posted that the official figure was 2,500, although who the official was not stated. We asked the police if any officer had estimated numbers, but a spokesman said that they had no figures available. There is little doubt that estimates get inflated in the heat of the moment. The Winchester Deserves Better march in 2016 from River Park was said to have had more than 2,000 people. But Belgarum sat on a bench at the park entrance on Park Avenue, and he counted the marchers going past with a clicker, and the number was half that.
Thank you. Now we have this week's announcements, and we're going to start with what's on. And there's a concert on Saturday, the 2nd of March at 7 p.m, and it's the Boy Choristers of Winchester College who will sing sacred and secular music in the Chapel of St. Cross. That's accompanied by Benjamin Cunningham, the college organist. Tickets can be obtained from the Porter's Lodge at St. Cross, and the telephone number is 01962 851375. That's 01962 851375. At the Theatre Royal, Rita, Sue and Bob Too. It's a semi-autobiographical play by Andrea Dunbar about best friends Rita and Sue, who start a fling with a married man, Bob, each thinking they can control the affair. This is between the 28th of February and the 2nd of March at the Theatre Royal, and tickets can be obtained from the box office on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 15th of February at 7:19 a.m., and begins at 5:21 p.m. And Wednesday the 20th of February, it ends at 7:09 a.m. and begins at 5:30 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
Back to the homeless, I'm afraid. Almost 100 homeless on Hampshire streets. Almost 100 people were living on the streets of Hampshire near the end of last year, new government figures show, with over a third in Southampton being non-UK EU nationals. Now councils say they will work to get more rough sleepers into permanent bed. Southampton County Council has even revealed that it has hired two new outreach workers to help deal with the increased demand and also to secure a long-term, sustainable decrease in numbers. The authority added that it is committed to tackling the issue of homelessness in all its forms. The pledge was made after data, which looked at rough sleeping numbers last autumn, revealed that Southampton had the highest number of rough sleepers in the county, with 29 people spending their nights on the street, the same as the year before. Of those, 11 were found to be non-UK EU citizens. Portsmouth was the next highest, with 19, of which one was non-UK EU national. The city also had the biggest decrease from the year before, which saw 42 people in its streets. This was the same number as Fareham, which has seen the amount of rough sleepers in its area more than triple since 2015, six. Test Valley had 9 homeless people, an increase from just 2 in 2017, with the New Forest up 1 to a 4-year high and Winchester down 1, both recording 8 people in each area. No rough sleepers were recorded in Eastleigh or Gosport. A spokesperson for Southampton City Council said, last year, working with partners, 12 extra bed spaces were provided in the 3 large hostels in the city specifically for rough sleepers, and a further 6 bed spaces have been added this year. These beds have been available since before Christmas and will remain throughout the cold weather. Where rough sleepers have accepted these additional services, they will be prioritised for permanent beds and homes. The council added that it has also secured the use of homes for homeless families. The spokesperson added the 29 individuals who appeared in the 2017 count are not the same individuals as those that were recorded in 2018, also 29. A Winchester City Council spokesman said, "We are committed to ending rough sleeping in the Winchester district by 2023. We work closely with organisations across the city and take a collaborative approach to tackling homelessness. Our outreach team work in partnership with local support agencies to help people find a way out of rough sleeping and to prevent future homelessness. In the last 2 years, we have worked with 2 local charities, Trinity and Winchester Church's Night Shelter, to support 64 residents out of homelessness."
Village scheme up for a national award. A small housing scheme in Houghton, near Stockbridge, has been shortlisted for a National Planning Award. The Kent's Orchard application was approved by Test Valley Borough Council in 2016 and saw 6 houses built with parking and landscaping, including an orchard, following the demolition of outbuildings already on the site. Now, the finished article has been shortlisted for the Excellence in Planning for Homes Small category for the Royal Towning Planning Institute, RTPI. Awards for Planning Excellence, Planning Portfolio Holder and Deputy Leader of the Borough Council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said, "We're really pleased that the hard work of our officers has been recognised." The Kent Orchard scheme has turned out very well, and that's a credit to the council as well as to the builders, Metis Homes. "I realise there will be some tough competition, but it would be fantastic to see the Test Valley Borough Council come home with a top prize, which would really, it really be deserved," added Councillor Adams-King. Despite the number of entries rising by almost 10% this year and the high quality of submissions noted by the judges, Kent's Orchard will compete for the top prize at the award ceremony in April. RTPI President Ian Tant, MRTPI, said, "Many congratulations to all this year's finalists who demonstrate outstanding contributions to planning, producing a positive effect on our communities and the economic and the environment. They have shown how planners can use their passion and skills to meet needs, deliver high quality design and tackle environmental challenges. They should all be proud of their role as a force for good in society. The winners will be announced in London on Wednesday, April the 24th. And there's a picture of Kent's Orchard at Houghton, nominated by for the award. It's a picture of a couple of houses and lots of trees around. That's very nice.
And this article poses the question, dance event on the rocks. The future of a dance contest in which thousands of Hampshire schoolchildren take part looks uncertain. Rock challenge events across the country appear to be in doubt as competitions are postponed. Southampton O2 Guildhall has confirmed that the organiser, Be Your Best Foundation, has cancelled its week with the venue. Other venues due to stage the spectacular competition have also seen last-minute changes, and the firm behind the event has refused to comment on whether events will go ahead. Thousands of school children across the UK take part in Rock Challenge events every year and produced by the Be Your Best Foundation. Wellow Primary School pupils were preparing for the competition this year following many years of success in the past. Last year, the school took top spot and was presented with an award by MP Caroline Noakes. They were followed by runners-up St Patrick's Primary School with Bitton Manor Primary School in third place. A spokesman with the Wellow Primary said, "We have heard many rumours," that's about the cancellations, "but we have not yet heard anything confirmed by the company." Dozens of schools from across Hampshire take part every year, investing hundreds of hours in rehearsals during school hours and in the evenings and weekends. They produce an 8-minute performance on a subject of their choice and are involved in everything from set design and costumes to makeup, acting and lighting. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of a young girl, one of the Bracefield pupils, performing at the Rock Challenge in 2016.
And this one headed 5 seconds to fame for singer Naima. She said it felt like a year, but it took just 5 seconds for this Hampshire woman's life to change. Naima Calfon's blind audition on ITV's The Voice UK captivated judge Will.i.am, who spun his chair after hearing just the first few words of her song. Tom Jones also turned during the last moments of the act, but the singer, who grew up in Winchester, chose to join the ex-Black Eyed Peas star for when she competes in the battle rounds. The 22-year-old, who recently relocated to Farnborough, moved to Winchester during her junior school years and attended Kingsworthy Primary and Henry Beaufort schools. She said, "It felt like a year before Will turned around when I was up there, but afterwards everyone said it was really quick, and when I watched it back I was so shocked, I had no idea it would happen. When Tom turned round, believe me, I was absolutely honoured. I was like, wow. But I chose Will because when he turned round early I felt a connection and I knew he would be the best option." Naima currently works behind the bar at the Gloucester Pub in Farnborough. Before moving away, she was a member of Winchester Theatre Arts School for around 6 years. Claire Goodwin, its principal, said, "It was very exciting for all of us to see her on the screen. She came here when she was 13 as a singer, took up dancing and acting, and went on to play 3 main parts in our annual shows. All of us here would like to wish her the best. She definitely has what it takes." The artist is well known for her singing in Winchester, having played many gigs at city venues, including the Railway Inn. Naima told the Chronicle she was in the middle of planning return shows to Winchester and hoped to play the Railway again. Naima's mum, Muriel Calfon, works in Winchester as a childminder and also runs workshops on making fermented food, cooked and non-cooked vegan foods. She said, "I'm so proud of her. She's amazing. All those years with Winchester Theatre Arts has paid off, as without it, I don't think she would have got so far. Right from a young age, as people kept saying, wow, your daughter has an amazing voice."
Alert at man asking for painkillers. An alert has been issued after a man reportedly knocked doors in homes in Hampshire villages and asked for over-the-counter drugs. Police say they have received several reports of unknown male knocking doors in both Bishop's Waltham and Waltham Chase asking for painkillers. Officers had asked residents not to give any kind of medication to this person or to anyone else. PCSO Sarah McCulloch said, "We have received several reports of an unknown male knocking on doors in Bishop's Waltham and Waltham Chase requesting painkillers from local residents. Can I ask local residents not to give out any kind of a medication to any person? If this male does happen to knock on your door and you do have concerns with regards to the male's health or well-being, please call the relevant service provider. Please say inquiries are ongoing to identify the male, to safeguard him and signpost him to seek the support he needs. Anyone with information should contact 101.
And this is a report from the Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition 2019. And it's headlined Sampling Top Bangers and Star Pies. And there's a picture there of one of the judges, Stuart Ham, who's critically analysing one of the rather nice-looking meat pies. It was a meaty task. A panel of experts from across the UK gathered at Eastleigh College to judge the Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition 2019, which had been organised by the local food group Hampshire Fair. The two-day event received an impressive 205 entries from Hampshire's butchers and pie makers. There were 12 categories in the competition, including traditional pork sausage, Hampshire sausage, speciality sausage, beef and lamb sausage, cold eating pie, hot eating pie, charcuterie, young sausage maker, and black pudding. 13 judges assessed the entries against strict criteria, including appearance, filling, texture, shrinkage, taste, and smell. Claire Holland, the chief judge, said, "Overall, the standard of the entries has definitely risen compared with last year, particularly in the young sausage maker category. Competitions such as this are an invaluable way for butchers to access the expert opinion of experienced and knowledgeable people within the industry." Hospitality and catering students from the college assisted at the competition under the guidance of tutor Greg Cheeseman. As well as cooking the entries, the students had the opportunity to sit with the judges to gain insight into what makes a good entry. With judging now complete, entrants must wait until Wednesday, February the 20th, when the winners will be announced at the ticketed awards ceremony being held at the Holiday Inn, Winchester.
And this headed new housing scheme for southern parishes. Village housing scheme opened, and there are several pictures of the mayor cutting the ceremonial ribbon at Phillimore Gardens Shedfield, and the Guild Hall looking very imposing, Winchester City Council's Roaring Housel initiative that's headed, and more snipping of ribbons, which is good, and the group of people who are obviously very pleased about this development, which I will now read about. A new development to provide affordable homes for families in the southern parishes of the Winchester district has been officially opened. The scheme for 13 affordable homes at Phillimore Gardens in Shedfield, near Wickham, was completed through Winchester City Council's role in the Hampshire Alliance for Rural Affordable Housing, HARA. An opening ceremony was carried out by Council Leader, Councillor Caroline Horrell, Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, and Chairman of HARA, and the Portfolio Holder for the Built Environment, Councillor Caroline Brooke. All three live in or represent rural wards, Councillor Horrell in Sparsholt, the Mayor in Swanmore, and Councillor Brooke in Denmead. Councillor Horrell said, "There is a real issue in rural areas that local people are unable to afford to live in the places where they were brought up, work, or have strong family connections. However, we're working hard to solve this, and one way is by working closely with HARA and ensuring new developments like this are made possible. New rural affordable housing in the district is vital for creating sustainable and cohesive communities, and that is why we are committed to finding an affordable housing scheme in every parish in the district. The land was provided by its previous owner, who passed away but wished to help the younger generation in the village get on the property ladder. HARA was set up to provide affordable housing in the villages of Hampshire and has provided 190 homes in rural locations in the Winchester district. Councillor Brooks said, Arar is the real success story for delivery of affordable homes in rural locations. The support of parish councils and local people to the Arar is vital. The landowner who provided the land for these homes shared our vision for the delivery of rural affordable housing. I am so pleased that we have been able to fulfil this as a legacy to the family. We will continue to work tirelessly to bring forward schemes like this in other villages to ensure that local people are able to remain in their villages and to support the local rural economies. And I forgot one picture which shows the development, which is such an improvement on many things around at the moment, is honey-coloured brick. And instead of endlessly flat-featured buildings, they're sort of staggered and they have features on the front of them. And it's definitely a very good development.
Andy Lester writes about loving our Hampshire House Martin visitors. About a week ago, the first House Martins began to migrate northwards from their wintering grounds in Western Africa. They've been spending the short summer break in Congo, Ivory Coast and Ghana, away from the miserable European winter. Between now and early March, they will make their way back to the Mediterranean, and by early April, will be back with us in the UK. The Latin name for the House Martin is Delicon urbicon, which translated from the Greek means swallow of the town. Whilst the House Martins are not actually swallows, they are a close relative, and like their rural cousins, return to build a nest made from mud and saliva in the spring. No one knows precisely how the House Martin first got its name, but many scholars have traced it back to St. Martin of Tours in AD 319. St. Martin was an avid naturalist and used to watch the migrating birds arrive from his windows in the spring. It is reported that he used to time the arrival of the House Martins almost to the day, and it has had a result of his passion for the birds' arrival that St. Martin's Day was established in March across the Mediterranean. How ironic that as St. Martin's Day is being celebrated by the church in countries like Malta and Italy, the hunters are also celebrating their arrival with guns and snares. The House Martin is in desperate trouble. Since 1970, we have lost nearly 50% of the population in the UK, and the declines across Europe and the Middle East are also significant. Many of the known reasons are obvious: hunting, climate change, less insects, loss of rainforest, where they winter, but some of the causes lie much closer to home. Our new housing estates are very tidy places. We like our lawns mowed, our brambles removed, our ponds netted, trees and hedges trimmed, and compost waste sent away from processing. The net result is that most urban areas have become increasingly sterile for wildlife, with nothing to eat, no materials to build nests, and no cover to hide from predators. Our garden fauna is incredibly poor. Southampton, Portsmouth, Romsey and Winchester, Andover, many of our towns and cities have become no-go areas for migrants like the House Martin. But the worst culprit is our hatred of the fact that they make nests under the eaves of houses. Back in the 16th and 17th century, House Martins largely nested on cliffs and quarries across the country. While the big move of people to the dirty, rapidly growing cities, House Martins saw an opportunity and became urban cliff nesters. In return, they gorged themselves on the abundant insect life found in the city centres and thrived. But now we struggle to tolerate any mess, and the idea that we may have to clear up after a nesting pair of House Martins have reared four young is more than any of us feel able we can cope with.
From offices to a seven-figure family home. And this article is talking about Hyde Abbey House, which is in Hyde Street. One of Winchester's grandest houses is set to be returned to its original use, as a home. The City Council has given permission for 17th-century Hyde Abbey House on Hyde Street to have a change of use from offices to a single-family dwelling. Planning officers made the decision under their delegated powers. Appliance Capital, or Appliance Palace Capital Limited, was asked for comment but had not responded at the time of going to press. Hyde in Living Memory, a book produced by the Hyde 900 Local History Group, said the building was a private hotel and restaurant from 1950 to 1975. It was a school from 1750 to 1855, and famous old boys included George Canning, British Prime Minister in 1827, and Thomas Garnier, a former Dean of Winchester, after whom Dean Garnier Garden and Garnier Road in St. Cross are named. Local councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "It'll make a wonderful home, but will need a fair bit of work. But it has some fantastic ceilings, a walled garden that is currently a car park." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Hyde Abbey House, which is a beautiful building, but will need quite a bit of work, I'd imagine, in its conversion back from offices to a home.
Winchester still top of least affordable table. Winchester has again been ranked as one of the least affordable cities to buy a house in the UK. New figures from Lloyds Bank show the city was only more affordable than Oxford and Chichester. Southampton also featured, ranking 8th, while Londonderry in Northern Ireland was ranked as the most affordable city. It comes as the figures show city living is at its least affordable levels for home buyers since 2007. The average house price in the UK city in 2018 equated to 7.2 times average annual earnings, making the cost of buying a home the least affordable since 2007, when buyers had to fork out 7.5 times their income, typically, Lloyds Bank found. The average home in the city cost The average home in a city cost £248,233, while average full-time earnings stood at £34,366. Lloyds found 7 cities where the average house price tops 10 times earnings: Oxford, Chichester, Winchester 11.3 times earnings, Truro, London, Bath and Cambridge. Southampton's average house prices were found to be 9.7 times earnings. Andrew Mason, Mortgage Products Director at Lloyds Bank, said, "Buying a home in UK cities remains challenging as average house prices are outpacing wage growth." The index tracked housing affordability in 62 cities using Lloyds' sister bank Halifax's Housing Statistics and Office for National Statistics, ONS, earnings figures. Here are the top 10 least affordable cities with the average house price to earnings ratio, according to Lloyds Bank. 1. Oxford, 12.6. 2. Chichester, 11.5. 3. Winchester, 11.3. Truro, 11.1. Equal fifth, London, Bath and Cambridge, all 10.3. 8. Southampton, 9.7. 9. Brighton and Hove, 9.6. I feel like I'm reading a football score. 10. Chelmsford, 9.3. Here are the 4 most affordable cities with the average house price to earnings ratio, according to Lloyds Bank. Equal first, Londonderry, Northern Ireland, and Stirling, Scotland, both 4.4. And 3, Newry, Northern Ireland, 4.5. And 4, Bradford, 4.6.
Chat Tea Cafe launches. The Mayor of Winchester experienced a slice of the action during the opening ceremony of a new community project. Councillor Frank Pearson was on hand to cut the cake at the first Chat Tea Cafe session held at the Badger Farm Community Centre. The event was launched by residents to provide a social occasion for the elderly and will see a team of volunteers set up the venue once every month. Local resident Simon Lever said, "The sound of people laughing with each other was uplifting for all, including some having met for the first time." The mission to create a monthly chat tea cafe for people of a certain age and who feel lonely has been an outstanding success. The next of the meetings will be held at the Community Centre in Badgers Farm Road on February the 25th. It will offer hot drinks and homemade cakes between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. For more information, visit www.chattea.co.uk or call 01962 868 630. I'll repeat that. 01962 868 630.
And my eye was drawn to this article by three quite dramatic photographs showing a load of rubbish that's been tipped illegally. The article's headlined 40 miles to dump a skip load of waste. An investigation has been launched after tons of rubbish was fly-tipped in a lay-by near Arlesford. Shocked resident Derek Mason discovered the waste close to his home near Ovington. He said that paperwork with the address The Galleon Pub in Lymington Road, Highcliffe, near Christchurch, and a box full of menus and assorted fittings were among the dumped refuse. Winchester City Council says it's aware of the incident and that its contents are being investigated. It's understood that a skip at the Highcliffe site may have been recently stolen and the rubbish later dumped by the thieves. A City Council spokesman said, "We're aware of the recent fly tip at Ovington and have retrieved evidence from the waste, which is currently being investigated. We treat fly tipping extremely seriously and will work with our police colleagues to secure prosecutions where possible." Mr. Mason said, "We live in a closed lay-by and a vehicle had reversed in from the main road, the A31, and just emptied its load and drove off again. It happened around 1:20 a.m. on Wednesday, January the 30th. I've got CCTV, but because it reversed in at the lay-by, I didn't actually drive past our property. So all we got were lights in the distance about 100 yards away. It must have been a tipper lorry because there's about 8 tons of junk that have been dumped. And it's not the first time this lay-by has been targeted in this way." Mr. Mason says he thinks the same people may have dumped rubbish at the same place about a year ago. Raymond Blanc's White Brasserie had submitted a planning application for the Galleon in Lymington Road, which has been closed since spring last year. On the fly-tipping incident, Brasserie Bar Company marketing director Catherine Curry said, "Although we are in talks regarding taking over the Galleon pub, we are not yet on site. We can confirm that the White Brasserie Company is not involved in this incident in any way."
Pupils tour Westminster. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, Steve Brine, was joined by a large group of children from Princess Mead School as they visited the Houses of Parliament. Over 50 children from the school enjoyed a tour of the building before meeting Mr. Brine in the Grand Committee Room just off Westminster Hall for a Q&A session. Mr. Brine also spoke about how the House works, his role as an MP and Brexit. He said, "I really enjoyed my time with Princess Mead this morning and was delighted to see such a large group up here in Parliament. I hope the children have all had an unforgettable day and enjoyed the time we had to chat. After my last visit to them last month to meet the school council, it was great to have them at my place." And there's a very nice photograph of Steve Brine obviously holding forth, and all these children sitting at these very smart desks all placed around as if it was for a conference, and each one with a microphone, which I quite hope is turned off.
"It could have been so different," says Mother. "A loving and caring man who struggled to cope with the loss of his benefits went missing just days before winning an appeal to get them back," an inquest heard. Sean Talbot spent more than a year relying on the financial support of his mother following the loss of his personal independence payment. Struggling to cope, he went missing on September the 4th last year. But between then and his body being found in the woodland near Chandler's Ford nearly 3 weeks later, he was sent a letter telling him that he would be paid the year of lost income. Following the inquest, his mother Netta said she felt the outcome may have been different had he known the outcome sooner. Winchester's coroner court heard Mr. Talbot described as a kind, caring and simply loving man, was found hanged in Hutwood on September the 22nd. A post-mortem examination also found potentially fatal levels of amphetamine in his body. The inquest heard that the 51-year-old of Devon Close, Chandler's Ford, had been suffering for a number of years with mental health problems, thought to have been contributed by the amphetamine use, and struggling to cope with being adopted as a baby. However, his mother, whom he had spent a lot of time with, told the inquest it all changed when they stopped his benefits. The inquest heard Mr. Talbot had his personal independence payment, a benefit that helps with extra costs of long-term health conditions or disability, stopped during 2017, meaning he had to rely on his mother. Mr. Talbot launched an appeal to overturn the decision, but never learnt of its success. His mother said, "It had already taken a year and he had no idea when the decision would be made. This certainly caused his depression to drastically worsen, as he hated having to look to me for any money." She added, "We were a great support for each other and I am lost without him." On the day he went missing, Mr. Talbot had been with a friend, Dennis Hartley, at the Cricketers Arms pub in Eastleigh. Mr. Hartley said in a police statement, "He was saying, I just feel like topping myself." Recording a conclusion of suicide, Senior Coroner Graham Short said he believed the issue of his benefits did contribute to his mental state prior to his death, along with his amphetamine use. He added that he could not be sure when Mr. Talbot killed himself, but believed it was more likely to have been on September the 4th after leaving the Cricketers' Arms.
This article refers to something that your readers were discussing before the start of this recording. It's titled, "Scheme Helps Bank Thwart Scammers." A rapid response scheme by the banks and Hampshire Police has prevented potential fraud victims from being scammed out of more than £1 million. Last year, New Strategy, the banking protocol, stopped more than £1.4 million being taken from victims of scams or fraud. The banking protocol trains bank staff to spot when someone is about to fall victim to a scam and to try and prevent them from withdrawing cash to give to a fraudster. Katie Worobek, Managing Director of Economic Crime at UK Finance, said, "Bank staff are on the front line in the fight against fraud, as increasingly sophisticated gangs target consumers directly and trick them into withdrawing large sums of cash. This rapid response scheme is giving bank staff the tools they need to protect vulnerable customers from scams, while helping local police catch fraudsters and bring them to justice. The banking industry will keep taking action on all fronts to combat fraud, working closely with our partners in law enforcement to crack down on the criminal gangs responsible." The scheme was rolled out by Hampshire Constabulary in June 2017, and since March 2018, has been implemented by all 45 police forces across the country.
Bid to turn suburban house into 8-bed dwelling. Plans to increase the number of people allowed to live in a Winchester home look set to be refused after criticism from council officers. The proposal for 44 Fremond Road, Wick, would see the existing HMO, House of Multiple Occupation, increased from 6 to 8 bedrooms. Applicant Julian Bessie said in the plans the building would not need to be physically extended. However, the move has attracted criticism from the City of Winchester Trust. A spokesman said in an objection, "Details regarding the necessary utilities and facilities required for such an extension are lacking." This application also appears to propose an extreme intensification of use for a small dwelling. Winchester City Council Environmental Health Officer Sarah Hayes-Arter also criticised the plans for what would have originally been a 3-bedroom house. She said, "Due to insufficient information provided, I recommend that this application be refused at this time." As the property is a terrace, there is the potential that additional tenants will create additional noise disturbance to properties on either side of this application. I would therefore advise the applicant to provide details regarding the current and proposed internal layout. Kevin Reed, private sector housing team leader, added, "This application proposes to create a bedroom to the rear of the current lounge dining area and the creation of a new living area incorporating the current inner room. The creation of bedroom 5 will cause the new living room to be an inner room devoid of natural ventilation and light."
Museum reopens. Jane Austen's House Museum in Chawton reopened for its 70th anniversary at the start of February, launching its dedicated anniversary exhibition, Making the Museum. It first opened to the public 70 years ago on July the 23rd, 1949, and has since welcomed over 1 million visitors and has become one of the most important and best-loved literary sites in the world. The museum, which recently announced award-winning comedian and author David Baddiel as its 2019 ambassador, will celebrate this special anniversary throughout the year. Making the Museum tells the story of 70 years' worth of strong characters, hard work, luck and determination that has gone into preserving this unique place of pilgrimage for the Jane Austen devotees from across the world. The story began in the 1940s when a newly founded Jane Austen Society ran a fundraising campaign to save the house, which had fallen into disrepair. This caught the attention of Mr. T. Edward Carpenter, a London lawyer, who went on to buy the house for the nation in memory of his son, who had been killed in action in World War II. He established the Jane Austen Memorial Trust to run the house as a museum. The display of objects and stories that form the exhibition reveal how the generation of devotees have gone about making the house the special place it is today. Visitors can learn the story of the museum itself, from the first objects on display and the building of the collection to the ways in which the house has been repaired, preserved and displayed. They will also be amongst the first to view the recently discovered last lines of Jane Austen letter unearthed from within a 19th century autograph album.
And finally, we have some good news for the environment. There's an initiative to boost elms by planting saplings. Around 50 new elm trees, loved by the rare white letter hair-streaked butterfly, are being planted at Basingwood this Valentine's. The project by the Forestry Commission and the wildlife charity Butterfly Conservation is hoping to attract these much-admired butterflies into the wood near Basingstoke in a bid to prevent regional extinction. The rare white letter hairstreak, once commonplace, is now at critically low levels due largely to the decline in elm trees, the sole food plant of the butterfly's caterpillar. Millions of elms have been lost across the UK over the last 40 years due to Dutch elm disease. Several sightings of this elusive visitor were spotted close to Basingwood last year, and it's hoped that by placing disease-resistant elm trees along the butterfly trail, the white letter hairstreak may be attracted to create a home here. This work is part of a critical habitat enhancement project carried out over the past 2 years, which has been funded by the Forestry Commission's partner, Forest Holidays, creating essential space, feeding and egg-laying opportunities for butterfly species. The butterfly trail follows a 1.8-kilometre route through the ancient woodland and is popular with many different types of butterflies, including the orange tip, a dazzlingly spring butterfly, or the common blue seen in late summer. The Forestry Commission managed the area to ensure it has a wide range of the trees and plants that butterflies need to survive, and that there are sufficient open spaces for these to grow and thrive. Michael Ullman, forester for the Forestry Commission in the area, said, "Elm trees were once a common feature in our woodlands. It is great to be able to play our part in their return and to create vitally important habitats for these rare butterflies." Last year, butterfly conservation volunteers recorded at least 23 different butterfly species in or near Basing Wood, and more surveys are due to take place this year to assess how population numbers are changing.
Thank you all, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and of course our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.